Tango Tango Papa 1871, September 25th, 2014.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you once again from home. Been home the past few days, and let's see, I had my dental appointment Wednesday morning, so that was, this is Thursday night, so that was yesterday morning. The technician basically numbed my mouth, and they did one half of the deep cleaning, so-called deep cleaning. And I don't know. I didn't know what to expect. My idea of what deep cleaning was, I think, was sort of over the, you know, the years. I had a couple of different people tell me, oh, I had such an, you know, they didn't really want, the first guy didn't, then this has been years and years ago, the first guy that I ran into that had had it done, he didn't even remember the name of the procedure, but he said they dug around on his gums, and then ever since then he had really sensitive gums, and he could no longer eat anything that was really cold, and so on and so forth. And then, kind of unsolicited, I was in a truck stop restroom, and there was this guy, and for some reason he started, you know, sometimes people start conversation for whatever reason. And this guy started, I don't know how it happened, but he told me about his teeth, and he said, well, about the deep cleaning, and that they had, you know, his teeth ended up, the gal didn't do it right or something, and his teeth ended up falling out, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, of course, I read on the internet about so-called deep cleaning, and that, you know, there's a lot of people have had negative things with it, negative experiences. So, and then other people say it was no big deal. So anyway, I've resisted it for the past couple of two or three years. I sort of resisted the idea. My dentist, when I was home the last time and I got my teeth cleaned again, I get them cleaned every 4 months, and the dentist really kind of talked me into it. And so they sent me to this other dental practice that kind of specializes in teeth implants and deep clean, you know, deep cleaning and so on and so forth. And so that's where I'm going. And so they did half of my mouth. So it ended up being the left half. Both the upper and lower. And then the reason that they do that, obviously, is to make it so that you can chew. You know, because if you need to eat, obviously, and if they did your whole mouth at once, or if they did the whole upper at once, or the whole lower at once, and then you'd have possibly have a problem chewing. Now, what ended up happening, you know, went in there, and it took the better part of 2 hours. The appointment was at 9 a.m., and I was leaving there, I guess it was about 10 minutes till 11, whenever I drove out of their parking lot. So, but in any case, she started on the top. So she numbed up the kind of the top, that's kind of gross, you know, because she, you know, of course she swabbed it to begin with, but that's just, I don't know, when they stick the needle up it, you know, kind of up it, you know, in your, between your lip and your gums, and that's even though they'd numbed it beforehand, you know, with a kind of a topical numbing agent, that's pretty gross. And, you know, it's almost like it, I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe, but it's not the most pleasant thing in the world. But in any case, she numbed that up, And then she started up there and completed that. And then she did the, before she was finished with the top, she went ahead and numbed, you know, went ahead and, you know, injected the bottom with, I'm sure she's probably using Novocaine. Injected the bottom and got and started it numbing and then finished up on the top and then made sure that the bottom was nice and numb and completed that part. So it was interesting because afterwards, you know, of course my mouth was numb. Half of it was really numb whenever I left there. And she told me, don't eat anything until you'd have to chew until your mouth, the numbness completely goes away. And so I followed her advice because she said you'd be chewing I'd be chewing the side of my tongue and so on and so forth, and I wouldn't know it. And that's very probably true. So I waited until I went home and waited until the thing was completely, you know, the numbing went completely away. And then I was, you know, I ate. And so I had, you know, my parents cooked. And so dad grilled some flounder out on the grill. And what else did we have? Baked potatoes and peas. And I ate a little bit of salad. And so all that stuff was pretty soft. Not much chewing was required. And so, you know, my mouth was sore. The whole side was kind of sore, you know. And it was interesting because the gums themselves weren't really, even though they were bleeding a little bit immediately after, you know, whenever I was leaving, they, you know, I spit out a little bit and there was some blood, a little bit of blood mixed in. But the gums themselves weren't really sore. You know, what was really the most sore was, you know, my whole jaw, even though I didn't really open my mouth very far. Because you don't open your mouth very far whenever they're working on it, unless they, you know, if they're operating, then they prop it open, obviously, but they weren't up. They weren't operating, so. Anyway, jaw was sore, you know, just the, I don't know why, but it was. And, well, I know why. It's because when they're doing the deep cleaning, of course, they numb everything out. But what they're doing, they've got their instruments, and so they have the ultrasonic cleaner that they normally use with the cleaning. But they get it down in, as close to the root as possible, the root of the tooth, and so they're sort of pushing those gums out of the way. And you have a lot of teeth in your mouth, you have a lot, hopefully you do, you have a lot of nerves in your mouth, you don't really think about it, but you do, in order to eat. You know, eating is very important, your mouth is very important, and so you have a lot of nerves, there in your mouth. So, you know, and then after they finish with the ultrasonic, then they also, she has a kind of like a pick type thing. And if you've had your teeth cleaned, you know what I'm talking about. Sort of a metal instrument that's got sort of a hook kind of a shape on both ends. And I think it's made out of stainless steel. And, of course, they sterilize it in between uses. But in any case, they really, you know, kind of, you know, rub back and forth on the teeth with that. So, the nerves were probably really stimulated, and then, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. She said while she was working on me, she said, well, am I hurting you? And I said, no. Well, your facial expression is telling me otherwise. Well, I guess, you know, she said that a second time, a little later. She said, are you sure I'm not hurting you? And I said, yeah, not feeling a thing. Well, boy, your facial expression sure indicates that you are. And I said, well, that must be involuntary. So it's possible that the muscle could have been tensed up on my jaw on the left side, and I didn't know it. You know, so that's possible. That may be part of why it was sore. But it was interesting because by the end of the day yesterday, most of the soreness was gone. Now, if I clenched my teeth together, as if I was chewing, like right now I'm clenching the back teeth together, there's just a little bit of residual soreness, not much, It's not even really sore. It's just like a little extra sensitivity back there. And that's almost, it's almost completely back to normal, which is remarkable because I was, you know, she said, I was at least expecting that it was, you know, it might drag on for 2 or 3 days or, you know, and I think everybody that's ever eaten, you know, kind of like corn chips or potato chips or, you know, you kind of poke yourself with the chip and it kind of cuts your gum a little bit, injures it. Sometimes you injure your gums and you don't even have any idea how you did it. I was expecting my gums to be sore in that way, and they aren't, they weren't, and they aren't at all. So it's that, you know, it's pretty interesting. So it's not what I thought it was going to be. So it seems to have, you know, I could probably go in tomorrow and if I had an appointment and have them do the rest of it, and it wouldn't be any big deal. But as it is, the next appointment is scheduled for the end of towards the end of October, whenever I come home again for time off. So that's when, you know, I'll make another trip in there and they'll do the other half of my mouth, the right side, my right, you know, my side. So anyway, did that Wednesday and that went pretty well. And so otherwise, I've just kind of been hanging out with my parents and so on and so forth, and just kind of doing the things that I normally do whenever I'm off. Let's see. So today, the tablet, you know, I'd ordered a Samsung Galaxy Tab 3. 8-inch, 16-gigabyte tablet from Home Shopping Network, HSN. And it was, they're selling them on clearance for $199, and that came today. So I'm impressed with that. It works, you know, every bit as well as I expected it to work, and it's, you know, it's going to work great as a replacement for that Nexus 7, which I've sold. You know, sold it to, what's that website, Gazelle.com. Sent it off to them. But that Nexus, this is going to, the Samsung tablets are, you know, if you look at the Samsung tablets in the store, you go to Best Buy, and you look at the different Samsung tablets, and of course they have a lot of tablets to choose from. You know, pay particular attention to any Samsung tablet or Samsung phone. They typically have fabulous screens. And so this Galaxy Tab 3 has a really good screen. Of course, I think it's an AMOLED screen. But it's really a spectacular screen. So I think I'm going to be very happy with that. And of course, the, you know, it's Samsung puts, you know, they integrated GPS chip in there. So you can use it as a GPS. And that's primarily what I, you know, I bought it to replace the Nexus 7. The Nexus 7, of course, I just kind of have it up there in the windshield, on that windshield mount that I bought through Amazon for, you know, that size tablet, that range of tablets. And so that's primarily what I used the Nexus 7 for, and that's what I'll be using this Galaxy Tab 3 for. And, you know, that is really useful to have that just as rigidly kind of mounted up there right above my dash with this suction cup thing that sticks to the windshield. And that thing keeps the tablet, it makes it stay put, and it's just right there, and I've got access to Google Maps. I've got access to I've got this app. It's called Truck and Travel, and that is incredibly useful as far as finding where truck stops are. And of course, that app uses the GPS as well, and it, you know, gives you all kinds of details about the truck stops. And the other nice thing about that app is the fact that it's pretty well up to date. So if it says there's a truck stop there, there's a truck stop there, usually. And if something is closed, then it did, you know, the thing gets updated really quick. So by the people that are using it, notify the guy that runs the app. So in any case, that came today. And what else did I do? I bought a 64 gigabyte chip for my phone. I had a 32 gigabyte chip in it, and so I've moved that to the 32 gigabyte chip. I moved to this Galaxy Tab 3. It's got a micro SD chip reader. So I moved that to it, and so I've put the 64 into the phone, and with the idea that I, you know, and I copied a bunch of the music that I had in iTunes, copied a bunch of that over to this chip, and so that just gives me some added flexibility as far as stuff to listen to. You know, if I want to listen to something wherever I'm at, that just gives me some extra stuff, and I've got the vast majority of my CD collection I copied across to that. I didn't, some of the stuff I didn't really care about, but you know, I copied most of it across, and so that's on there. Plus, you know, I still have gigabytes and gigabytes and gigabytes of space free on the 64 gigabyte chip that I put in the phone. So I did that, and I got that pretty reasonable. It was the one that I bought, it's a Samsung micro SD chip. It was the 64 gigabyte, it was the one I bought, was $36 or something through Amazon Prime. So I think I'll be pretty happy with that. So anyway, next I have an audio comment from Jeremy that I received via the Voxer app. So let's go ahead and listen to Jeremy.
Hey, Tom, it's Jeremy. I know I haven't checked in a while, so I just wanted to drop you a line to say hi. And I was listening to your recent podcast. I think it's called Messing with Computers. I'm not sure which number it was. It was either that or the one before where you were kind of talking about the cult of Apple. Maybe it was the one before that. Anyway, so the cult of Apple, and you were kind of talking about the megachurch aspect of the Apple cult and the presentations that they make around you know, new product introduction, press events, and things like that. And you seem to imply that Apple was drawing a lot of their technique from the megachurch approach. And I don't know, to me, I think product marketing has been around for quite a while. So it seems to me that maybe it's the other way around, in that the church is sort of dumbing itself down to the level of mass appeal.
Okay, well, let me interrupt. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I do agree that churches, you know, especially like the mega churches, which have to qualify this, never been to a mega church, never been to a mega church service, but I kind of, you know, I've heard people describe it, and I'm sort of familiar with sort of how they kind of operate. So I do agree that they are kind of dumbing themselves down. I can tell you what they're doing, and I don't even have to know all the details, but I can tell you exactly what they're doing. The danger is that they're kind of, in order to gain as many donations as possible and have as many, you know, be part of the group and what have you. And the group aspect of the megachurch is very important. They're coming up with mass sort of mass ego appeal, something that'll appeal to the, you know, in order sort of suck on the, you know, the collective egos of as many people as possible. You know, and so there's this mass appeal that happens. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you would go to that to have your ego massaged, you know. But, you know, everybody's egos, you know, the wrong side of their ego is different. You know, some people sort of like that to pretend like they're, you know, there's some people that kind of like to pretend that they're really good people and so on and so forth, and they're going to church and, you know, and so on. And, you know, whereas there are other people that go to the bar instead, and then the bartender massages their ego, or the other bar patrons sort of massage their ego. Or maybe they go to rock concerts to get their egos massaged, you know, and have the group, the quote unquote group experience. So I do see what you're saying. It's sort of twisting it around. Now the problem, you know, you can call it marketing. You know, you can call lots of things marketing, and but what you have to understand is that, you know, it's not a fixed thing. You know, that's where people make their mistake. They think that human beings, they see them as sort of fixed. And people do this politically. They think that every human being is the same, or, you know, that, and it, and they completely fail to see that the equation changes sort of as morals, real morals sort of go up. As real morals improve, as people become more genuine, so on and so forth, they're less manipulatable, they're less suggestible, so on and so forth. Now, you can still market to those people, but you have to kind of change it a little bit. But as it goes down, as the morals fall through the floor, as they have in the United States in particular, as the morals sort of fall through the floor, then you can employ other marketing tactics, and those marketing tactics will work more readily. So it's, you know, human beings aren't fixed. You know, humanity isn't a fixed thing. You know, either our morals are good, they go up or they go down. And that's, as I say, excuse me, as I say, that's the part that people sort of fail to take into account. They see human, you know, sort of human nature as static and unchanging, and therefore humans are all equally manipulatable, regardless of whether they're in Nazi Germany or modern day America or 1950s America or 1800s America, or you pick your country, they are in a time, they look at all human beings as being the same, and it's not. There are differences, and those differences revolve around how genuinely moral, and I'm not talking about fake morality, I'm talking about the genuine thing, you know, and we can, people will argue over what that is or how you arrive at it, but I'm simply not defining that at the moment, other than saying genuine morality equals, you know, it's people are less suggestible. And the more you have the people that are genuinely moral and have a genuine God-given identity, then the less, those people are much less suggestible. And the more of those you have, the better off you are. So, in any case, they're using these tactics, and the fact that the tactics work as well as they do is evidence. That's simply evidence of how far we've fallen. Now, different people have different, you know, not everybody, you know, falls the same way. You know, you can have different sort of different things they fall into. You know, so some people fall into drugs, and some people fall into alcohol. Some people fall into television, or some combination, is usually a combination of all these things. Or they can fall into marketing traps, and, you know, where you know, kind of buy new cars all the time. You have those kind of people, or they become obsessed with, you know, almost, you know, racing or you name it, football. That's another big indicator. You know, the popularity, that's another mega church. It's a, what I'm really describing is idolatry. And if you look at it that way, the more rotten people become, and the more, you know, then they fall into the, you know, idolatry, because you have to, you don't have a choice. If you really lose your morals, then you will become idolatrous, and you will idolize something, whether you like it or not, whether you want to or not. But you're going to lie to yourself, and you're going to tell yourself that you really want to be worshiping whatever it is you're worshiping. And so it really is idolatry. And so the popularity of whatever it is, if whether it's Apple computer or the iPhone or football, this mass popularity of football, all these sports, soccer is another one, hockey is another one, you know, wrestling people, you know, so on and so forth. There's any number of things that that you know, that are big indicators that there's a real problem with society as a whole. And the fact that, you know, and of course there are always people, there are always germs that are, what, you know, you look at it as a germs versus immune system, there are always, versus organism, there are always germs that are waiting to take over. They're just waiting for the immune system, which is the morals, wait for the immune system to go down, and then the opportunistic, then, you know, then common garden variety germs that aren't a threat are, you know, suddenly turn into opportunistic infections. So there are always people that are wanting to, you know, to try to take over, to try to, you know, reprogram people and push them and push them into doing this or that. And some people are better at it than others. Steve Jobs just happened to be very good at it. But the fact that he was able to do as achieve what he did, again, is a more of a commentary on the society as a whole. You know, you look at what's gone on now, this iPhone 6 fiasco, 6 and the 6 Plus, just in the past 2 or 3 days, there have come out all these stories about, you know, the iPhone 6 Plus in particular is bendable. You know, people are accidentally bending the device by simply putting it in their pocket, you know, and the pants are too tight. Put it in their front pocket, pants are too tight, or if they sit on it. The thing is made out, you know, the body, I guess, is primarily made out of, you know, kind of thin aluminum to keep the device light, and they're bending. Now, I've never, I guess I'm hearing stories now, well, the iPhone 5S was also bendable. I hadn't, I guess I had missed that, missed those stories. And it must, and if there were some stories, that must not have been a very big deal. But this has turned out to be a major snafu for Apple. But you know, here is this premium device, 900, and, you know, you buy the 128 gigabyte version, $949 off contract. You're paying the price, by the way. You think your cell phone company is subsidizing it, quote unquote. You're paying for it. You know, you're paying for it. By the way, I have a story about credit in just a minute, and I don't want to forget that. It's pretty interesting. But in any case, the phone is kind of inferior. It's not the, it's supposed to be a premium device. And yet it's got its problems, and you know, they're trying to kind of catch up with the market. They're trying to catch up with Samsung, and they've added a bunch of new features, you know, that are that have been in Android for 2 to 3 years. In many cases, they've added all these new features to this iOS 8, which they had to withdraw, by the way. They had an update for it, and it today there was a news story they had to actually withdraw it because it was causing people's phones to some of the phones were with the update were losing their cell service, and then the Touch ID would no longer work. So, but in any case, they're really not that great at devices. And yet people are programmed to think, oh, I have to have that. The group I'm part of, I have to have that. And some of those people are just diehard. They have to have it. Got to have it. That's the object of worship. That's the golden calf. That's the golden idol. Got to have that. So I do agree that, you could look at it as a marketing tactic, and that companies are already doing it, so it's rampant. But there are people, the point I want to make is that there are people, and it could be marketing people, it could be people that are pretending to be preachers and so on and so forth, and they may themselves even think that they're trying to do good and be preachers and save people and so on and so forth. But it's really marketing, and it's the same thing, it's suggestibility. And in the end, it doesn't matter whether it's about the truth. You could have words about the truth. You could have Bible. Wrap yourself in Bible verses and chapters, and memorize. And if you don't understand it, if you don't really get what the meaning of that, you're wasting your time. You might as well be out drinking or, wrapping yourself, in aluminum iPhones that bend. Whatever. It doesn't matter. So anyway, I wanted to, I agree with you basically that, that the mega churches are kind of taking advantage of people. But then on the other hand, the people, whose fault is it? Is it the drug pusher's fault or the drug user? The pusher's despicable, but the user is the worse entity as far as I look at it, because without the user, the pusher couldn't exist.
And borrowing the marketing aspect of it from industry, just from regular commercial industry. So if you think about it in terms of, say, like the Mad Men approach, where really they're just, all they're doing is every product, they're just trying to boil it down to some snappy phrase or some emotional tug of war kind of thing. I think that the Joel Osteens of the world are borrowing from the Apples of the world in such a way that really, if you consider the message of the church as just softening over time and becoming more about how much God loves you just as you are, and how you don't need to change, you're perfect just the way you are, and God wants you to be happy, and God wants to give you money and cars, and, God wants you to feel better about yourself. Like, I feel like that whole message is borrowed from these emotional responses that product marketing tries to elicit. And really, if you think about the mega churches as more or less the money making ventures, which is what I truly believe they are, because they preach they preach prosperity Christianity and things like that, and giving to the church will make you wealthy beyond your wildest dreams and things like that. I tend to think that they're more or less, crafting their message to be geared at mass appeal, as opposed to probably what was more close to what the church's actual mission used to be, which was preaching truth from the scripture, convicting hearts and in minds in the process, and causing people to want to turn away from their sin and find new life through Christ, which was generally the message for at least for a long time.
Okay, well, let me interrupt once again. Could you imagine in today's society, the way things are right now, if there were a church that told you the truth, that you're really rotten, that you're headed straight to hell, so on and so forth, and they proceeded to tell people that they were wrong. that they, you know, that they feel bad because they, you know, the problem is the reason they feel bad is because they're on their way to hell. The reason they feel bad is because they have poor morals. They've made, you know, they've got the wrong entity is in charge of them. In other words, they're sort of possessed. The reason they feel bad is because they're worshiping false idols. They're worshiping the golden calf. That's why they feel bad. Do you think a church would be able to make money at that? Of course not. That people don't want to hear the truth. They want lies. God loves you just the way you are. Is the big, you know, that's a huge lie. I don't know if that's the biggest lie that there is, you know, but depending on how you look at it, it could be considered the biggest lie ever. God loves you just the way you are. He doesn't love you the way you are. God loves you from what you are. And the reason you feel bad is because that's God's love. What do you think that conscience is? God's loving you. And you think it's some sort of horrible thing that's making you feel pain. And you got it exactly wrong. So that's, you know, these people have figured out that they can just suck on egos. And of course, people will open their wallets and give you their money. And the same way with if you're really good at marketing, you know, whatever your device is, if it's halfway decent, you know, you have it, you know, you give it an emotional appeal. By the way, why do emotional appeals work? People think, oh, they work. Why do they work? It's normal. It's just part of normal human nature. Emotions work. Sorry, they shouldn't. There's something wrong. That's fallen human nature. Because they really shouldn't work. Emotional appeals should not work. And if they do, if emotional appeals work on you, you've got something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you spiritually. There's something wrong with you if emotional appeals work. Sorry, stepping on your toes. Good thing I'm not a preacher. If I passed around a plate, you wouldn't put anything in it. You'd probably, if there's anything in there, you'd probably take it out and steal the plate. So just imagine, you know, but if you, let's say you're in business and you got a halfway decent product, all you have to do is, you know, all of these people, one of the things that Steve Jobs, I'm convinced he knew, and maybe he didn't know why, but he knew that people's lives, you know, that most people's lives were kind of empty. And especially the kind of people that he was appealing to, they were sort of empty. And they like to kind of congregate in groups and find out what the other people think, you know, kind of find out what the group think is. And he sort of knew that. He knew that you know, what these people were like, and he tried to give them something that would sort of make themselves feel better about themselves. You know, and that's kind of what he really strove to do, is to make people feel better about themselves, give them a kind of a sense of identity that they're really superior. They're really good people, and they're really superior. And he tended to appeal, because the really hardcore Apple customers are angry. They're sort of angry at whatever, at their core. And they're guilty. Guilty people. And I don't know if he realized that or not, that part of it or not. But he knew that he knew how to appeal to a certain segment of the population. And get those people to, you know, sort of, you know, this is the magic wand. This is the, you know, here's the magic baton, you know, and this is the object that we're, you know, that you're all to worship. And he was really good at that. You know, and sometimes the product could be total crap, and there was a core audience that would go for it. And you know, so the fact that people can respond emotionally to things, that's an indicator there's something wrong. There really is something wrong. If you can be manipulated via your emotions, it's your, you know, there's something wrong with you. It's not the person that's doing the manipulating. It's the fact that you can be manipulated. If someone's able to manipulate you, a red warning sign should be going off in your mind. Something should be telling you, hey, you know, I'm wrong. Something, I should have never been able to be manipulated like that. I should never respond to pressure that way. Especially, you know, kind of like emotional pressure. And, of course, but we look, oh, that's perfectly normal, you know, and to suggest otherwise, oh, you're hurting my feelings. I'm going to cry, you know, so, I could go on and on. So let's listen to the rest of, Jeremy's comment.
Message that was preached from the pulpit in churches. So, the Osteens and the, you know, just that basically they've come around full circle to be motivational speakers who happen to meet on Sunday morning. They put on a good show and they elicit a lot of emotional responses. And there's a lot of people in the audience that are connecting emotionally with the message and raising their hands in the air and waving them back and forth and, you know, shedding tears and things like that. And, you know, if you are just looking for an emotional connection with that unseen force that you'll call God in that moment of time.
Okay, let me interrupt once again. The thought of that is frightening. The thought of, you know, waving your hands back and forth and you're sort of lost in the crowd, you know, just, you know, in some sort of a euphoria, sort of like a mob euphoria. Waving your arms back and forth, you lose your, you know, and all of it, and you probably feel, you're probably sort of feeling distanced from your, whatever your problems are, and, you know, your rotten life, and your guilty feelings, and so on and so forth, and you're sort of waving your arms back and forth, you know, and doing some kind of sing-song or something. And you think you've made an emotional connection with God. It's exactly the opposite. You've made an emotional connection with Satan. Satan wants you to feel good about yourself in that way. You kind of get lost in the group. You know, that's really frightening, because that's really what's going on. Now, you may not like what I'm saying. I imagine there are people that are listening to me and they think I'm full of crap, or they're cringing because they, you know, if you're one of those people, you better turn it off right here. Because if you're waving your arms back and forth and you think you've made some kind of an emotional connection with your creator, it may be the wrong, you know, it may be a recreator, you know, that you've made a connection with. You don't contact, you know, you're not making a connection with your creator by waving your arms back and forth in some sort of group, you know, sort of ecstatic group euphoria. That's what a thought.
They'll say, you know, if I'm away saying I made such an emotional connection with God this morning at church, when really I think it's just something that's inherent to human nature, is that feeling of, you know, wanting to be overwhelmed by something bigger than yourself. So whatever that message is, whether it's just a moment that you can kind of reach out and connect with an unseen force, or just kind of a collective of people around you that feel the same way, I think that's what religion has pretty much become. And it's more of it's more about groupthink and motivational speaking now than it is about speaking truth and conviction from the Word of God. And that is just an observation from, you know, an amateur out here in the trenches. When I heard your comparison, I thought it was a good comparison. I just think that maybe it's a little bit backwards, and that maybe, you know, religion is where the message has sort of gone off the rails. Either way, great stuff, Tom. I like the discussion a lot. stay safe out there, okay? I hope everything is well. Talk to you soon. Enjoy your vacation. Bye.
Okay, well, thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, I'm sure, you know, I know that for a fact that there's been, you know, religion has sort of borrowed from marketing, and I'm sure marketing has borrowed from religion, and, you know, these things have been going on for, you know, as long as there have been human beings around. There have been people that are trying to figure out how they can sort of manipulate the herd, manipulate the flock for their advantage. And, you know, so you can, if you're a good preacher, like in the case of a religion, a good religion, not necessarily a good preacher, but a good religion is going to try to take the flock of people, and they use that word in the Bible, the flock. They're going to try to take that flock and kind of at least aim them in the right direction. You know, and the Ten Commandments are sort of like a spiritual jail, you know, to kind of keep people in a spiritual prison, and you know, to keep them from committing more sins, more crimes against their Creator. And so that's what, you know, religion is basically sort of like a jail. You know, kind of in along the same lines, the Jewish people, originally God did not want them to have a king, but they kind of, because they were rotten, they kind of demanded a king anyway, even though that the king would ultimately be their kind of end up becoming their downfall. You know, they kind of demanded it anyway. So, but anyway, the marketing, you know, if you have a flock, and if the flock's morals go south, as they inevitably end up doing, they sort of go in the wrong direction, then the flock or the herd, there are people that know that they can take advantage of that. And of course, they know there are plenty of people that know, you know, like communists in particular, communists, socialists, so-called progressives, they know that if they want to take over, they know that they have to pull the morals down. They know that they have to destroy morals. Destroy as many people's morals as possible. From a group standpoint, destroy the morals and then take over. You've separated people from their God-given identity, and then you can kind of, once they're separated, then you can sort of inject your own suggestions in there. Inject your own instruction set. And there are people that, you know, that love the power that do that. But then there are people that really think that they're going to program utopia, that they can reprogram people, and they're going to reprogram, and they're going to have utopia. And of course, it can't be. Because it cannot work. So, in any case, if you're going to a mega church and so on and so forth, you're wasting your time. You might as well, that's going to, in the end, that's not going to do you. The only good that it can do you is that after a while, maybe if you're really a searching person, you may have to go through that experience. You may have to go through some kind of a church experience and find out that it's really empty. You know, they have the words about the truth, but they ain't got you may have the words to the song, but you don't have the music. And it's not the same thing. And if you don't know, if you can't sort of see the difference of what I'm talking about, there's no point in even listening to me. So, in any case, I wanted to, there's this article, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I thought it was, pretty interesting. This is, I don't know, I think it might have been originally from the New York Times. Miss a payment, this is the title of the article. Miss a payment? Question mark. Good luck moving that car. And then I've got this story. The thermometer showed a 103.5 degree fever. And her 10-year-old's asthma was flaring up. Mary Bolander, who lives in Las Vegas, needed to get her daughter to an emergency room, but her 2005 Chrysler van would not start. The cause was not a mechanical problem. It was her lender. See, they're blaming it on the lender. Mrs. Bolander was 3 days behind on her monthly car payment. Her lender, CAG Acceptance of Mesa, Arizona, remotely activated a device in her car's dashboard that prevented her car from starting. Before she could get back on the road, she had to pay more than $389, money she did not have that morning in March. I felt absolutely helpless, said Mrs. Bolander, a single mother, who stopped working to care for her daughter. It was not the only time this happened. Her car was shut down that March, once in April, and again in June. This new technology is bringing auto loans and Wall Street's version of Big Brother into the lives of people with credit scores battered by the financial downturn. See, now they're saying, oh, the poor people there, their credit scores are battered. That evil financial downturn battered their credit scores. Well, I'm sorry. I don't look at it that way. You know, the financial downturn didn't batter their credit scores. What battered their credit scores, they borrowed money and they won't make the payments. They, you know, they've got car loans and they probably have credit cards and so on, and they won't make the payments. That's called deadbeat. And so I think that this is brilliant. This is a brilliant use of technology. Because if you know, the number one, the lender, it's got GPS in it. The lender knows where the car is at. And number two, if they fail to make the payment, then the lender simply turns it off. That's brilliant. That's a wonderful use of technology. And, you know, this article is trying to write, you know, it's written in such a way that it's the evil lender and the evil downturn in the economy is hurting these poor people and so on and so forth. But the fact remains that they're not making their payments. If you don't make your payment, your lights, you know, you don't pay your light bill, the electric company should shut your lights off. If you don't pay your if you got a car payment and you don't pay your car payment, the car loan company has every right to repossess your car. They have every right, in this case, to flip the switch and shut the car off so that it won't run. They also have every right to know where it's at. You know, these people agreed to it. If you go ahead and read the article, it's right in the contract. It's not something that was a surprise. So, you know, this, as I say, this article's sort of written in a way that, oh, it's these poor people and it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, sorry, you borrow the money, you make the payment. And that's the way it goes. So. But that's a brilliant use of technology. And that also is, you know, I've said all along that the idea has been to throw as many people as possible out of control. You know, throw as many people as possible out of control from, you know, so they have no self-control. And then you come along after the fact with all kinds of rules and regulations and you enforce it externally. Now, you know, government wants to do that. People are using government and the school system and so on and so forth to throw as many people out of control as possible. But in our case, because, you know, we have corporations, and corporations can do the same thing. They can enforce with technology. And that's what this is. And I think it's brilliant. I think it's a brilliant use of technology. Force people to do the right thing. If you can't, if you don't have any self-control, you deserve to be forced to do the right thing. And so this is a brilliant example of that. So, anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting. So, final thought. You know, recently I read the book, you know, the entire book, Gravity Driven Universe. And the way matter is created, and you know, the idea basically is that there's this sort of a, you know, for lack of, it's kind of hard to describe what it is, but it's sort of like a time wind. You know, whatever this is sort of on the edge between the spiritual world and the physical world. And this time wind blows, and wherever it sort of creates spins, you know, it started with little fireballs that, you know, just unimaginably small little fireballs that kind of ended up becoming the basic building blocks of matter and so on and so forth. And then this same time wind becomes space and, you know, sort of space-time, because space-time are, they're sort of inseparable. Space-time, they become the same wind becomes space-time to matter. And matter is unthinkable. Einstein said it, matter is unthinkable without space, and space is unthinkable without matter. And for whatever reason, the idea popped into my head, you know, because we wonder, is space infinite? Is because space is huge. You know, you look at the size of the, you know, it's unimaginably huge. And so we wonder, is it infinite? Or is it finite? You know, and there's this idea, we can't understand infinity. But I realized space is infinity. You know, it is infinite. And here's how. Because if you can imagine that this, whatever this is, this gravity, you know, because it kind of becomes gravity, and you know, but this whatever it is, this wind that is blowing, you know, kind of, you can think of it as a wind, but it's coming from every possible direction, and it's able to flow through itself. If you can imagine that is actually, that's what causes matter to come into existence keeps it into existence, keeps it spinning. And then that becomes space to the matter. So therefore, you know, this gives birth to matter, gives birth to the particles that become matter. Then, so therefore, you know, those things are sort of going around and around and around. You can think of it that way. It's infinity. And so, therefore, space is infinite. It goes on forever. And that's kind of one way you can, if you can kind of catch, I'm not doing a very good job of describing the thought, but if you can understand that, then you get a little grasp of what infinity is. You know, because it's hard for us as human beings to sort of wrap our minds around the concept of infinity. But if you imagine, you know, the infinity of a circle, then you can understand that, you know, that this is sort of giving birth to matter. And so therefore the space isn't, you know, it is infinite. So you, but I don't know, because you wonder what is infinity, you know, and you try to understand what is it, what is infinity, what is forever, so on and so forth. You know, what is, how can something have no beginning and no end? And because we, you know, we as human beings, we sort of come into existence and we go out of existence, we have a hard time kind of understanding these things. But yet, there they are. And so I don't know. I didn't do a very good job of describing it, but if you can just imagine that this time wind, this gravity, whatever you want to call it, that's basically gravity is a good thing to call it, that is coming from every possible direction at an unimaginable speeds. It's able to, except where it intersects, it's able to pass through itself. And then that create, where it intersects, that creates a little fireballs that ended up becoming matter, that end up becoming the particles that, you know, that end up becoming, you know, the sort of the elementary particles that end up becoming matter and so on. So, you know, so like, I don't know, you had muons and, you know, and then they found this Higgs boson particle and so on and so forth. Becomes those particles, and then those particles, you know, kind of make up the atoms, and then you had the atoms kind of fit together and make up the molecules, and you've got all these different forces that sort of arise, and everything arises from that one thing. Everything kind of arises, and then that thing becomes something else to that which arises. So it becomes space and time to the matter that it gave birth to. So therefore, that space and time is infinite. And, you know, so you can kind of understand, you know, at least I'm able to kind of wrap my mind around the concept of infinity, you know, in a case where it kind of makes sense. So anyway, I thought that was a thought that was kind of worth passing on. And again, I'm not doing a really great job of explaining it, you know, kind of the concept that I have in my mind. But it, you know, I thought it was, you know, understanding what, you know, kind of getting an understanding of what infinity really is or how it could really be, is important. So in any case, I think I'm going to go ahead and bring this to a close. Hope everyone is having a great week so far, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.